Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the A to Z of David Bowie. I'm Mark Riley, and that colourful character is Rob Hughes.
As you'll be aware, the A to Z of David Bowie is free to download.
Lunacy.
But if you'd like to support us along the way and be a member of an exclusive Bowie club, you can, and here's how.
There's an exclusive Bowie members club called Cheap Things, and for just $5 a month, wow, you can be part of it.
Why? So now you're thinking $5 isn't much, but what exactly will I get for my hard-earned cash?
Well, in short, you'll get lots of great new exclusive material delivered to your door.
Well, computer, actually, Mark.
Via a system called Patreon.
That's right, Mark. Patreon is a payment system that allows you to contribute your monthly subscription and offers you a portal to access the exclusive material.
Material such as...
interviews with Bowie's cohorts and friends.
There'll be regular film Bowie quizzes.
Bowie guitar tutorials.
Unreleased archive written material.
Competitions.
And perhaps most impressively, short films featuring the Cheap Things team.
Ah, that'll be me, Mark, Howard Knock and Jason Reed.
Visiting various Bowie places of interest.
And much more besides.
All this for just $5 a month.
So if you can't resist, simply go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/cheapthings, or one word, and join up.
There's also a website.
Bowie@cheapthings.com.
Book early.
S is for Sessions, BBC Sessions.
With permission, okay, we are now going to pretty much give you an audio book of The Complete David Bowie by Nicholas Pegg. Now, this is a great book, isn't it, Bob?
It is, indeed.
It's one of the Bibles, really. We always go on about Any Day Now by Kevin Kang because it's so great for that particular period of Bowie's life. But for anybody who wants anything closely resembling a brilliant reference book, then this is it.
Certainly.
But it's much more than that. It's really, really interesting and brilliantly written as well. And so everything is in there. You've got the songs from A to Z. You've got the albums. You've got videos, tours. It's all in there, and it seemed like it was the most kind of concise and easy way, particularly for me and you, Bob, to do this. So, in effect, we've just let Nick do all of the work. But I did get in touch with him via Twitter, and bless him, he gave us complete carte blanche to just give everybody else the material that is in his book, which Wonderful. Is what we're going to do, isn't it?
It is, indeed. So we should probably set it up by saying that between 1967 and 1999, Bowie recorded 15 major sessions for BBC Radio.
He did.
So this is the compilation of those.
I'll tell you what was really interesting. So when I got into Bowie, at that point in time, the two bootlegs that were kind of surfacing at that point were vinyl and cassette.
Right.
And I remember a mate of mine had a cassette of the Peel Sessions, and it was Bowie, and it was all, you know, stuff like Bombers and that.
Yeah.
But I didn't know really who John Peel was, because I was a toddler.
Yes.
But they were the real kind of like the holy grail, if you like. Mm. And at that point in time, you couldn't even like copy cassettes.
No, that's true.
Do you know what I mean? I remember Frank Sidebottom, he once did a thing whereby he had a 4-track cassette set up.
Yeah.
And it was just basically 4 of those little cassettes that you used to get, the cassette players.
Right.
Sellotaped together. You're just being mischievous. But of course, a little bit later down the line, you get the Ghetto Blasters and you can easily do copy to copy.
Yeah, sure.
Which was kind of revolutionary. And those mixtapes came out of that and people started making up their different cassettes for each other.
Yeah.
Just brilliant. But at that point in time, you had a cassette. You could record on it, which seemed great.
And, yeah.
And people, you know, of my generation would record off the TV and it would obviously sound really, really bad. But if somebody had a cassette of the David Bowie Peel Sessions, you couldn't copy it. You had to borrow it. It's just the real terms that we're talking
yeah.
in.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, of course.
So we're looking at Top Gear, aren't we? From, well, this is from, recorded the 18th of the 12th, 1967, broadcast 24th of the 12th, 1967.
So this took place at Piccadilly Studio One. The producer was Bernie Andrews. Bowie's tunes at this point, Love You Till Tuesday, Little Bombardier, In the Heat of the Morning, Silly Boy Blue, and When I Live My Dream.
Okay, so here we go, thanks to Nick Pegg. Bowie's first BBC session came about when Kenneth Pitt discovered that Bernie Andrews, producer of John Peel's Sunday afternoon show, Top Gear, was an admirer of the David Bowie album. David received 10 guineas for the recording, which was backed by the seven-piece Arthur Greenslade Orchestra in arrangements which remained faithful to Bowie's studio recordings. Love You Till Tuesday closely followed the single version, right down to the Hearts and Flowers coda, whilst While I Live My Dream replicated the version 2 recording. Bowie apparently agreed to include Little Bombardier only after repeated requests by Bernie Andrews. The show was broadcast on Christmas Eve, Bowie sharing the bill with Jimi Hendrix, Traffic, Family and Ice.
Wow, terrific. It appears that the mysterious Something I Would Like to Be, which the Pitt Report claims was recorded for the session, is no more than a myth. It did not appear in the broadcast and has never been referred to by any other source. Kenneth Pitt is equally adamant that In the Heat of the Morning was not played at the session, although it definitely was. It's therefore to be conjectured that Something I Would Like to Be might exist in Pitt's notes as a working title for In the Heat of the Morning, a new song at the time whose official Decca recording lay 3 months in the future, appearing in this session with a very different arrangement and lyrics.
So the thing about Ken Pitt is that he was actually pretty organised, wasn't he? If you look at the Pitt Report, I mean, that's very detailed. Again, that is another really important part of the Bowie jigsaw, you know, in literary terms. But he got that wrong, so he's adamant it didn't happen, but everybody knows that it did.
Well, you know, these things happen. You know, songs change colour, change shape, change name, don't they? So you can see where he did kind of go wrong on that.
Of course, yeah. So now to the second session for Top Gear. So recorded the 13th of the 5th, 68, broadcast 26th of the 5th, 68. And it was Piccadilly Studio One once again. Producer Bernie Andrews, London by Tata, In the Heat of the Morning, Karma Man, When I'm Five and Silly Boy Blue, not broadcast until it was repeated.
Ah, so for Bowie's second Top Gear set, this time sharing a bill with the Animals, Family, Alan Bowne and Mike Stewart, David enlisted the arranging skills of his new producer, and the extravagant 14-piece band was duly billed as the Tony Visconti Orchestra. I love that touch. They included John McLaughlin on guitar, Herbie Flowers on bass, predating his work on Space Oddity by over a year, a pre-Blooming Barry Morgan on drums, Alan Hawkshaw on keyboards, Tyrannosaurus Rex's Steve Peregrine Tuck joined Tony Visconti on backing vocals.
Silly Boy Blue was only aired in the repeat broadcast. It was standard BBC practice at the time to hold back a track or two for repeat. When I'm Five from this session is the only full studio recording David ever made of the song, and it was this version that later appeared in the Love You Till Tuesday film and on its accompanying soundtrack album. Yeah, I love that. I mean, I've seen that film recently. Was it part and parcel of the Finding Fame?
There were clips in there, yeah.
Yeah, where Bowie's looking really so coy. Yeah. I mean, and acting like a real toddler, you know, like biting his bottom lip and all that kind of stuff. Brilliant. With the master tapes remaining in the hands of Bowie and Tony Visconti, the remainder of this session has never leaked onto the bootleg circuit. And as a result, the appearance of every track bar When I'm Five on Bowie at the Beeb was greeted with considerable excitement. The majestic arrangement of Silly Boy Blue a particular note.
Yeah, so we will get to Bowie at the Beeb a bit later, won't we?
Yep.
So the next one, the Dave Lee Travis Show, recorded 20th of October 1969, broadcast 6 days later, producer Paul Williams this time, and it took place at the Aeolian Hall Studio 2. The songs Unwashed and Somewhat Slightly Dazed, Let Me Sleep Beside You, which wasn't broadcast, and Janine, not broadcast either.
Okay, for this short but excellent session, Davey was backed by Space Oddity band Junior's Eyes, Mick Wayne on guitar, John Honk Lodge on bass, Tim Renwick on guitar and John Cambridge on drums. BBC records reveal that Junior's Eyes lead singer Graham Kelly was also present, although it's uncertain whether he contributed to the session.
Only Unwashed and Somewhat Slightly Dazed was broadcast alongside the then current Space Oddity single and a short interview with Brian Matthew recorded on the same day. An excerpt from the interview plus Let Me Sleep Beside You from this session, a superb rendition. Perhaps Bowie's definitive recording of the number appeared on the BBC Sessions 1969-1972 sampler, while both of these tracks, plus Janine, were included on Bowie at the Beeb.
Right, on to the Sunday Show now, recorded the 5th of the 2nd, 1970, broadcast 8th of the 2nd, 1970, the Paris Cinema Studio, Jeff Griffin. So the lineup of songs, Amsterdam, God Knows I'm Good, Buzz the Fuzz, Karma Man, London by Tata, An Occasional Dream, Width of a Circle, Janine, Wild-Eyed Boy from Free Cloud, Unwashed and Somewhat Slightly Dazed, Fill Your Heart, The Prettiest Star, Signet Committee, Memory of a Free Festival, and Waiting for the Man, which was not broadcast.
So this is an important one, isn't it?
It is.
So so. Although they would not call themselves Hype until a fortnight later, Bowie's new backing band, referred to as the Tony Visconti Trio in BBC documentation, made its debut at this hour-long concert, the sixth programme in a new series of shows compared by John Peel and recorded before a live audience.
It's funny, isn't it, how you can go from being an orchestra to a trio just overnight. That's show business.
It is.
For the first four numbers, David accompanied himself alone on acoustic guitar before being joined by Tony Visconti on bass, John Cambridge on drums for a couple of songs, with Mick Ronson adding his guitar skills from Width of a Circle onwards. It was Bowie's first live performance with Ronson. I met him for the first time about 2 days ago through John the drummer, David remarks at one point between numbers. As well as marking the first appearance of a prototype version of Width of a Circle, the session offers a brace of Biff Rose covers, one of which would later be recorded for Hunky Dory. The other, Buzz the Fuzz, is more of a rarity. This session offers the only surviving version of the song as performed by Bowie.
All right, live recordings of An Occasional Dream, God Knows I'm Good, Signet Committee and Memory of a Free Festival are also exclusive to this session. The latter was edited down from its original 6 minute 40 length to just over 3 minutes when the concert overran its allotted hour. For the same reason, 5.5 minute version of Waiting for the Man was cut before the broadcast and has never seen light of day.
So, for many years, this session was available only in the form of a decidedly ropey off-air recording available on various bootlegs. That's what I'm talking about. So, Bowie at the Beeb changed all that, including Amsterdam, God Knows I'm Good, The Width of a Circle, Unwashed and Somewhat Slightly Dazed, Signet Committee and Memory of a Free Festival from this historically fascinating concert.
Oh.
I tell you, there are some, and I've very nearly bought them on occasion, BBC transcription discs.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know.
You know, they will crop up, wouldn't they, on eBay every now and then. And it would have, like, maybe a David Bowie session like maybe this one, the Sunday Show, on one side. And it could have something completely random on the other as well. Brilliant artifacts.
Yeah, they are.
I really kind of wish I'd bought the ones that were up for grabs. But they were always quite dear because, well, it's just the coupling of David Bowie and the BBC on vinyl, you know, it just obviously didn't exist at that point.
Yeah, I always take a look. As you say, they're always pricey, which you can understand. Of course they are. So move on, next one now, Sounds of the 70s for Andy Ferris, recorded 25th of March 1970, broadcast on the 6th of April 1970. The venue this time, the Playhouse Theatre Studios, producer Bernie Andrews. The songs are Supermen, Waiting for the Man, Width of a Circle, Wild Eyed Boy from Free Cloud, which wasn't broadcast until the repeat.
And I know that Bernie Andrews was pivotal in the BBC releases. You know, he had a lot of the material on tape and very kindly gave them up. That's as I understand it anyway. So the first three songs from this Hype session were broadcast on April 6th edition of the new Sounds of the 70s series, hosted by Andy Ferris, and all four were aired by David Simmons on the 11th of May. They are easily distinguished from later BBC versions by Hype's heavy guitar, almost prog rock sound. Kenneth Pitt records in his memoir that it was during this session that he first experienced the uncomfortable atmosphere that presaged his fall from grace. He would cease to be David's manager a few weeks later. Waiting for the Man from this session appears on the BBC sessions 69 to 72 sampler, while the excellent Wild Eyed Boy from Free Cloud is its sole representative on Bowie at the Beeb.
All right, so in concert, John Peel now, recorded the 3rd of June 1971, broadcast on the 20th of June. Venue, the Paris Cinema Studio, producer Jeff Griffin. The songs Queen Bitch, Bombers, The Supermen, Looking for a Friend, Almost Grown, Cooks, a song for Bob Dylan, Andy Warhol, It Ain't Easy, Oh You Pretty Things, which wasn't broadcast. So Bowie's second live concert session saw him sharing the bill with Mike Heron, formerly of the Incredible String Band, in John Peel's In Concert series. Living out his Warholian factory fantasies in the weeks leading up to the Hunky Dory sessions, David invited a selection of friends and colleagues to make guest appearances during the session. This is going to be incredibly complicated, began compere John Peel, and he wasn't wrong. In addition to the core band of Mick Ronson, Woody Woodmansey and Trevor Boulder, David had brought along vocalist Dana Gillespie, who sang Andy Warhol, George Underwood, who sang song for Bob Dylan and the third verse of It Ain't Easy, Jeffrey Alexander, who sang the second verse of It Ain't Easy and backing vocals on Almost Grown, and Mark Carr Pritchard, who sang Looking for a Friend. Peel introduced Pritchard as being with a group called Arnold Corns, who have a single called Moon Age Daydream, which nobody on the BBC has played at all, which is a great pity, he said. Bowie's sidemen were referred to as members of a group called Ronno, who are apparently going to be making an LP fairly soon.
Well, they didn't.
No.
Okay, so despite David's own reservations, it was an entertaining set and marked several significant firsts. Most of the songs were new to the repertoire, and with four very different versions of the forthcoming Hunky Dory Dory tracks, including Kooks, composed only days earlier. Two songs that were later scrapped, Looking for a Friend and Bombers, the latter on which David on piano, a complete one-off, Almost Grown, and a free-for-all finale of It Ain't Easy, predating the release of Ziggy Stardust by an entire year. The recording is of immense historical interest. Sadly, time constraints resulted in the cutting of Oh You Pretty Things before broadcast, and this number is now lost.
Ooh. The date of this session has been widely misquoted as the 5th of June, but BBC Records and Bowie at the Beeb confirm that the 3rd of June is correct. Bombers, Looking for a Friend, Almost Grown, Cooks, and It Ain't Easy are included on Bowie at the Beeb.
Now, we are bigging up this book here. We'll just jump in again, say it's A Complete David Bowie by Nicholas Pegg, and it's perfect in every way, apart from the fact that the type is actually a little bit small.
I'm holding it very close to my face here.
I tell you, do you know how you start off with those 3D books when you have to start off with them right on touching your nose? And you drag it away slowly.
It's a shame we haven't got a giant magnifying glass each, but anyway.
Next time. Where are we up to now then?
So we're up to Sounds of the 70s, Bob Harris now, recorded 21st of September 1971. Broadcast on the 4th of October. The venue was Kensington House Studio at T1, and producer John Muir. The Supermen, Oh You Pretty Things, 8-line poem, Cooks, Fill Your Heart, not broadcast until repeat. Amsterdam, not broadcast, and also Andy Warhol, again, not broadcast.
Again for Sounds of the 70s, but this time presented by Whispering Bob Harris, who was, of course, Bowie's mate anyway, wasn't he? And shared a flat with Angela at one point. Mm. This session is unique in that Davey was only joined by Mick Ronson for a pared-down and largely acoustic set, which is also notable as the only session of the 1960s and 70s to be recorded in stereo. Both Bowie and Ronson contributed guitar, piano and vocals to a selection of songs recently recorded during the Hunky Dory sessions. According to engineer Bill Aitken, it was a strange session, two voices, two acoustic guitars, or, in some numbers, two electric guitars. The electric guitars sounding very strange as neither Bowie or Ronson had brought in amplifiers.
Oh.
Consequently, the guitars were direct injected. The fact that they DI'd led me to think they weren't taking the session too seriously. However, it's worth a listen. It's hard to imagine that because, you know, all of these breaks that Bowie was getting through the BBC, which I know that he was most grateful for.
Of course.
Wouldn't think that he would not take it seriously, but I wonder if he turned up thinking there'd be amplifiers there.
Possibly. It's a strange move. Anyway, to continue, my own feeling then was that Mick Ronson's contribution to Bowie's sound and style was something he was never given enough credit for, said Bob Harris later. I like to think that duo session was a rare moment of Bowie, in effect, acknowledging that Ronson wasn't just a sideman, but an integral part of his whole sound.
Yeah, he continues, as in the previous session, the Supermen followed the alternative arrangement as recorded during the Hunky Dory sessions. Andy Warhol, one of the two tracks never broadcast, was included on the BBC Session 69-72 sampler, while a Supermen and 8-line poem represented the session, arguably one of Bowie's best, on Bowie at the Beeb.
Definitely. Superman's great on Bowie at the Beeb, isn't it?
It is amazing.
So another one for John Peel now, Sounds of the 70s, the 11th of January 72, broadcast on the 28th of that month. Venue, again, Kensington House Studio T1, and John Muir, producer. Hang On to Yourself, Ziggy Stardust, Queen Bitch, Waiting for the Man, and Lady Stardust, not broadcast until the repeat. All right. So as Ziggy Stardust loomed on the horizon, the Spiders recorded a succession of very similar sets for BBC Radio, often confused over the years as bootleggers have combined and incorrectly labelled the results. However, most of the sets can be accurately identified by minor variations in Bowie's rendition of the lyrics.
The confusion gets off to a flying start with this very elusive session, which, presented by John Peel, saw the first major unveiling of Ziggy Stardust material. The BBC Session 69-72 sampler CD claims to include Hang On To Yourself from this session, but in fact it features a version from the next Sounds of the 70s session, recorded a week later. Furthermore, the CD's liner notes state that Hang On To Yourself is the only surviving track from the session. This is incorrect. On the contrary, every song from this session except Hang On To Yourself has appeared on bootlegs, usually in considerably inferior quality to the other 72 sessions. Notably, this is the only session from the 70s to be omitted entirely from Bowie at the Beeb.
That is confusing. Identifying lyrics for this session, Queen Bitch begins well. I'm up on the 11th floor, waiting for the man contains dark grey building up there, flights of stairs. Bob Harris again now, Sounds of the 70s, recorded 18th of January 1972, broadcast the 7th of February. This one recorded at Studio 5 in Maida Vale with Jeff Griffin as producer. Bowie does Queen Bitch, 5 Years, Hang On To Yourself, Ziggy Stardust, Waiting For The Man. Again, not broadcast, that one.
I'll tell you what, I recently went to Maida Vale for a Six Music thing, and yes. I did a little bit of filming there just for posterity. I mean, you know, it's been filmed before, but not by me, and it's going to be knocked down before too long, which personally, for me, not just me, I know a lot of people think it's an absolute tragedy, you know? Mm. But I went into 4 and 5, which are the two studios that Bowie used, and I filmed them, and with the intention of putting some of the material on Cheap Things,
yes.
the website that we run, and the members club that we run. So it was quite spooky, because I've been in there a lot myself, you know, just doing sessions with the bands that I've been
yeah,
in.
Yeah, sure.
But you never really stop to think of, like, oh, the history that I've gone through it. And even though when you walk into Maida Vale, there's photographs of the Beatles and there's photographs of Led Zeppelin, and you do get a chill down your spine when you actually just stop and think to yourself, you know, the early Beatles will have been carrying their own guitars down these hallowed hallways, you know, and Zeppelin finding the feet and all that kind of stuff.
Wonderful.
Obviously we Mark Radcliffe and I had a bit of cross-pollination with Bowie in there, but we'll get to that later on.
We will. All right. So back to this session then with Bob Harris. So this electric session was recorded by the Spiders only a week after its predecessor, this time for an edition of Sounds of the 70s presented by Bob Harris. It's worth noting that the two January 1972 sessions coincided with the recording of the last few tracks of the Ziggy Stardust album itself at Trident Studios. While laying down these BBC tracks, the Spiders were simultaneously working on the original versions of Suffragette City, Starman and Rock and Roll Suicide. What a time to be around Bowie.
Oh, man. Hang On To Yourself from this session appeared on the BBC session sampler we've talked about, wrongly labelled as coming from the previous session, previously talked about. The entire set is included on Bowie at the Beeb, although the album's initial pressing accidentally substituted the recording of Ziggy Stardust from the 16th of May 1972 session. And there are some CDs that were pressed up to correct that.
Yes.
Well, I've got a couple.
I knew you'd have a couple. Yeah. Well, at least one. Well, I haven't got one, as you might.
Well, if I can find more than one copy, you're welcome.
Oh, mate. So, identifying lyrics for this session, Bowie's vocal for Queen Bitch begins with a whispered, oh yeah, before, I'm up on the 11th floor. And after the first line, David says, louder. 5 Years is unique to this session and has, I had to cram so much, everything in there. Hang On To Yourself, as she'll come to the show tonight, praying to the light machines. Ziggy Stardust has played it left hand, but played it too far. And Waiting For The Man has Grey Dirty Building up there, flights of stairs.
Yeah, so Sounds of the 70s for John Peel, recorded the 16th of the 5th, 72, broadcast on the 23rd of the 5th, 72, and Maida Vale Studio 4. Pete Ritzema being the producer. Hang On To Yourself. It's so many versions of Hang On To Yourself.
I know. It doesn't really change the set list, does
not
it?
Not much. You would think, I mean, because now, when anybody comes in to do a session for us on Six Music, and they always say, oh, we can do that. And I say, well, you can do it if you want, but you've already done it once. And so it's already in the archive and an alternative version to what's on the record.
It's a weird one, especially when you consider all these are so compacted, aren't they? Just within a month or two of each other, these sessions.
I suppose that's part of the problem, really, isn't it? I mean, because though he could have gone further back and done stuff from Man of Soul the World and Hunky Dory and Ziggy, which he does to an extent, but he doesn't mix it up very much, does he?
Not much at all.
So Hang On To Yourself, Ziggy Stardust, White Light, White Heat, as opposed to Waiting For The Man, and Suffragette City, Moon Age Daydream, you can guess what's coming next, not broadcast until repeat.
I'll tell you what, he was determined to get Velvet Underground in there somewhere, wasn't he, on every session.
Yeah.
On the eve of Ziggy Stardust's release, the Spiders recorded 3 further sessions. The first was for a Tuesday night John Peel show, incorrectly billed in some documentation as John Peel with Top Gear, Sounds of the 70s, a title which has done nothing to ease the confusion of historians. For this recording, Ronson, Boulder and Woodmansey were joined by pianist Nicky Graham, whose frenetic dexterity on tracks like Suffragette City and White Light, White Heat helped make this tight, exuberant set arguably the best of the 1972 sessions.
The revised repeat featured Moon Age Daydream for the first time, but omitted Hang On To Yourself, they were sick of it probably, and Ziggy Stardust. The latter appears on the BBC session sampler, while the entire set is included on Bowie at the Beeb.
This session is more easily identifiable than its immediate predecessors, not least because it features 2 songs, Suffragette City and Moon Age Daydream, that were included in no other BBC set. Identifying lyrics for the others, Hang On To Yourself as comes to the show tonight, praying to the light machine. Ziggy Stardust as well, he played it left hand, but made it too far. And White Light, White Heat has the ad lib, White Light made me sound like Lou Reed.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The A to Z of David Bowie with Mark Riley and Rob Hughes.
So, the Johnny Walker Lunchtime Show, and it was recorded the 22nd of the 5th, 72, broadcast the 5th to the 9th of the 6th, 1972. It was Roger Pusey who produced it, and it was recorded at the Aeolian Hall Studio 2.
Yeah, so Starman, broadcast June 1972. Space Odyssey, not broadcast. Changes, not broadcast. And OU Pretty Things, broadcast again 5th of June 1972.
So for this session, the Spiders were joined once again by pianist Nicky Graham, something of an unsung hero of Bowie's 1972 tour, whose work is showcased well on the faithful recreations of Changes and OU Pretty Things included here. Unusually, the recording of Starman incorporated a remix backing tape of the string arrangements from the Trident original, but the remainder of the performance is entirely new.
That's interesting. Rather than showcasing the whole session, Johnny Walker networked one song per show for 5 days in a row. Oh You Pretty Things on the 5th of June, followed by Starman on 4 consecutive days. Changes and Space Odyssey were not broadcast, but the latter was included on the BBC Sessions 69-72 sampler, while the complete session, yes, you guessed it, appears on Bowie at the Beeb.
Identifying lyrics for this session, Space Oddity includes the ad-lib, I'm just a rocket man, ooh, while a full band rendition of OU Pretty Things is easily differentiated from the stripped-down acoustic version recorded the previous year. Starman and Changes are unique to this session.
Back to Bob Harris now, Sounds of the 70s, recorded 23rd of May 72, broadcast 19th of June. This is back to Maida Vale, of course, Studio 4 with producer Jeff Griffin. Andy Warhol, Lady Stardust, White Light, White Heat and Rock and Roll Suicide, recorded only a day after its predecessor, Bowie's final BBC session of the 70s was for Bob Harris's Sounds of the 70s and once again saw pianist Nicky Graham joining the Spiders in the studio. All but White Light, White Heat were later included on Bowie at the Beeb.
Identifying lyrics for this session, Andy Warhol ends with David Adlib in a camp impersonation of Warhol, concluding with, well, I only look at the pictures myself. Lady Stardust ends with him saying, wrong song. White Light, White Heat begins with, white light, gonna take out of my brain. In Rock and Roll Suicide, which is unique to this session, Bowie mutters, I'm going to lift this mic up a bit in the air over the opening bar.
It gets rid of the mythology of that song, doesn't it?
It does a little bit. And so, I mean, if you look at it, crucially, the next session that we're going to jump forward to now, for the BBC anyway, is in 1991. We'll get to that in a moment. But of course, we're looking here at the 23rd of May, 1972. That's on the cusp of it all happening for Bowie, isn't
it? Yeah, of course it is, yeah.
And so it is strange because he doesn't go back for decades. And so that was a case of him never really looking back and never needing the BBC again from that point on, obviously, and not going back. Because most people, you can see that in the careers of a lot of the bands. You know, if you look at the history of John Peel's sessions, and he will see them up to becoming famous. And then for one reason or another, they quite often don't go back. The same thing happened with T-Rex as well, but of course. Mark Bolan was only around for a short while afterwards, sadly. But we're looking now at Mark Goodyear's evening session, recorded and broadcast the 13th of the 8th, 1991, from Maida Vale Studio 5 producer Jeff Smith.
Yeah, so A Big Hurt, Baby Universal, Stateside, If There Is Something, and Heaven's in Here. After a break of 19 years, Bowie returned to the BBC in August 1991 to record a set with Tin Machine, broadcast live on Mark Goodyear's evening session. the five tracks later released on various formats of Tin Machine's Baby Universal single.
Okay, so 1997 now, Changes Now, Bowie, and The Man Who Sold the World, Superman, Andy Warhol, Repetition, Lady Stardust, White Light, White Heat, Shopping for Girls, Quicksand, and Aladdin Sane.
During rehearsals in New York for his 50th birthday gig, Bowie recorded 9 songs exclusively for Radio 1's retrospective Changes Now, Bowie, interspersed with an interview by Marianne Hobbs. The often surprising selection offered a revealing insight into David's own perception of his career as he reached his half century. For the mainly acoustic set, David was accompanied by Reeves Gabrels on guitar, Gail Ann Dorsey, bass and vocals, Mike Garson on piano, and Zach Alford on drums. The session was produced by Mark Platy, who later recalled that we did most of the songs in a day, just David, Reeves and Gail together live. I added some strings and keys after the fact. David did 6 lead vocal tracks in 2 hours.
Okay.
Well, this is what's going to make me jealous here. We now move on to, well, you have a personal connection to the next one, don't you?
Yeah, it was a session that Bowie did for Mark Radcliffe and I. So it was the 25th of the 10th, 1999, Maida Vale Studio 4, producer Will Saunders. He was the voice of Scoff Cruddle in Frogging.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, just for the, you know, the completist out there. So I do remember well, Survive, Driving Saturday, Something in the Air, Can't Help Thinking About Me, and Repetition. And I have told this one before, but yeah, Mark Radcliffe and I were just on our way out of Maida Vale to get a sarnie, and Davey was coming in, and we did know him a little bit by this time, and he just said, oh, hey, yeah, guys, hang on a minute, I believe one of you want me to do Driving Saturday. I was like, well, yeah, would you mind? He went, no, of course not, no, we'll do that. What else would you like? Here's the current set list. And so I grabbed it off him before Mark had a chance, and I was like, are you doing Can't Help Thinking About Me? Yeah, we're doing that now. Can we have that? Yeah, of course you can. And so he was going to do 4 tunes for us.
Yeah.
But yeah, he didn't. He did 5. So he added Repetition. And I remember, obviously, it's a song about domestic violence and domestic abuse. And it was afternoon Radio 1. It was not really afternoon Radio 1 fare. It was, if you consider that we're playing, like, you know, Craig David and Usher and all that kind of clobber. Yeah. For Bowie to be doing that on this particular session, I know he got a kick out of it. I know that he thought, this is brilliant, I'm just still being allowed to do that.
Yeah.
And again, just previously mentioned, you know, the fact that there was nobody else on Radio 1 who was really interested in David Bowie at that particular point in time.
It seems ridiculous now, doesn't it? It seems. Do you know why he chose Repetition, by the way? I know it's a great tune just in itself, you know, subject matter or not, but did he kind of confide in, you know, why he added that one on as an extra?
He didn't, no, but I mean, he had done it for the Changes Now Bowie thing, so he was in his set list, and he had worked it out, so it was there to be had.
Right.
And like I say, it was probably driven slightly, not by mischief, but by the fact that he could do it, you know?
Yes.
So it
was
a case of delivering this really gnarly, horrible tale in the middle of a load of incongruous kind of, like, you know, pop music.
Yeah, of course.
But it was an amazing day, as it would be, and I do remember that, Warren Peace turned up.
Oh, yes.
That was Jeff McCormack. Hello, Jeff. And obviously, we're all excited that Bowie's there and he's got the band with him. You know, it's all Mike Garson and everybody. It was Paige Hamilton playing guitar at that point.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
From Helmet, who didn't last very long, really. But it was like, Warren Peace is coming. And then he tipped up and everybody's going, is that him? You know, it's kind of like almost this mythical creature.
Right, of course, yeah.
Warren Peace. He was omnipresent with Bowie, but he's like a name that you would hear here and there, but you didn't know. Irani, his daughter, came with him. And also, Duncan was there, as I remember.
Ah, yeah, I was reading about that before, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So Duncan turned up, Zowie Bowie, if you want to call him that. So there was a real buzz about it. And I do remember that we brought a Deerstalker Sherlock Holmes hat with us.
I've seen those pictures.
Yeah. And we were messing about with it. And then he took it off my head or Mark's head, I can't remember, Bowie, and just put it on. And there's some photographs, some really, really not very good photographs. That's the real tragedy of it. We had some photographs taken by a professional photographer in another room. Radcliffe and I both got these dodgy matching suits on, which we always wore. And Bowie looks great, as always, quite long hair. But the actual shots within Studio 4 at Maida Vale, they're just really grainy and crap because people, you know, like if you've got an iPhone now or Android, you get these amazing photographs. That wasn't the case. And even Blam, who's a great photographer, he didn't take any photographs on the day. I do remember hearing every now and then they say, meh, meh. And that was apparently, that was Mark Adams, Blam, communicating with Bowie. It's some Monty Python reference.
Right, all
he's
right.
Going, meh. So you can just, I'd like, what's that noise? And apparently it was him, and I think he was trying to make Bowie laugh.
Right, okay.
That might have well been what it was.
Wonderful, okay.
But I took that deerstalk, I thought, right, Bowie's wore this deerstalk, yeah, I'm going to have that. And I put it in a BBC box, and we got on the train, got a load of cans of beer and wine and stuff, just celebrating the fact we'd done this thing with Bowie, and then ended up leaving the box on the train.
Oh, you're kidding me.
With a deerstalk in. So if anybody's got that out there, could I have it back?
Yeah,
that'd
send
be
it
really
back.
Nice.
Be a love. Okay, that's fantastic. So his last session was a Saturday music show recorded on the 25th of October 1999, broadcast on the 6th of November. Again, Maida Vale, Studio 4, producer Chris Watmore, Survive, China Girl, Survive and Changes. Back to back with the previous Mark Radcliffe session, Bowie recorded a further two tracks for Billy Bragg's Radio 2 Saturday Music Show, followed by two more for broadcast on Chris Evans' Breakfast Team on Virgin Radio.
Yeah, and so this stuff are all, I'm going to go down here now, right off mic, very unprofessional.
There we go.
But obviously, so over the years, there have been various different bootlegs of these. And so I've got this lot here, The Rise and Rise of Ziggy Stardust, Volumes 1, 2, 3 and 4. And these were like, these were bootlegged up for me by a mate a long, long time ago.
Okay.
And you're like, oh, it's just brilliant. I think it's pretty much all on there, you know?
Yeah.
Just absolutely brilliant stuff. To have it all in one place like that was great. And then another mate, I won't name him because it's obviously bootlegging, and but he did this, which was really nice.
Ooh, nice.
Is it a 5 CD set? It is,
right.
and it's got a great cover on it, and it's just and it includes the stuff that isn't available on Bowie at the Beeb. So it's everything.
Oh, hey,
that
Ooh.
Really is the complete David Bowie recordings.
I feel underdressed now because I just brought along my very deluxe big vinyl box set of Bowie at the Beeb, which came out in 2016. Having won the 3 CD limited edition 3 CD set of Bowie at the Beeb on your Radio 1 show with Mark Radcliffe back in the day, which is how we know each other in the first place, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's right. And so, and you won the Guy Pilart David Bowie signed clobber, didn't
you? I did indeed, yes.
Which is great. But when this came out on vinyl, oh, I was straight in there. It's such a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Yes.
And yeah, it is one of those. I get a credit in it, and I don't know why.
Oh, do you? Let's have a look. Yeah. Let me get the. I mean, first time I think I've really touched it. I don't play it because it's just so immaculate, this thing. What a document it is.
I have played it, yeah. It's got special thanks to a load of people just before above the Parlophone BBC logo.
Yeah, you're in there.
I'm in there.
You are.
Just about hanging in by the skin of my teeth.
Three from the end, but yeah, you're in there. Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a brilliant thing. I have played it. I couldn't resist. And to have this stuff on vinyl, it was great enough having it on bootleg CD because you just thought, oh, bingo. You know, I'm in. I've got it all. And it's just the mythical stuff, bits and bats that you had, as we've mentioned previously, stuff that was wrongly labelled and you weren't really sure about. You know, we didn't know what Bombers was really because obviously it was going to be on Ziggy but ended up not being.
Mm.
And this absolutely beautiful booklet and then being able to listen to the stuff within on vinyl is just an absolute treat, a real treat. But also we should at this point mention the radio theatre show that Bowie did.
Ah, yes, okay.
Which is available through the like the 3D extra discs. So you've got CD1, CD2, extra disc, BBC Radio Theatre, London, June the 27th, 2000. And so there's some sleeve notes in here, funnily enough, from Blam.
Okay.
Okay, and he wrote these. He said, an evening with David Bowie at the BBC Radio Theatre, London, Tuesday the 27th of June, 2000. Typical conversation 2 months before the BBC show was announced. A fan, psst, Blammo, have you heard anything about David doing a tiny fan club show in London? Blam, nope, nothing like that's happening, I'm afraid. The fan. Oh, you wouldn't say there was, even if there was. And so it goes on about the day.
Okay.
He's a wag, is Blam, but he says in there that he mentions all the people who turned up, but he said that I tried to get in downstairs by showing everybody my 1973 David Bowie fan club membership card, which isn't true. And he also says I was frog marched up the stairs by Julian Stockton, hello Julian, who worked for the outside organisation, and I was sobbing. But I can just state for the record here that isn't true. And we were in working for the BBC. We got in there before anybody else. And I could have sat on the very front row. But it's a tiny theatre. And I knew it was being filmed. And I really, really did feel uncomfortable about being anywhere near the cameras. And so I sat on the front row of the balcony.
Okay.
And it's a tiny, tiny theatre anyway, so it didn't matter about the fact that you were there. You were never far away from what he was doing. And for those of you who've seen it, I can't remember how it's edited really, but Bowie had a chest infection, and quite often between the songs, it was a little bit like Blue Velvet and Dennis Hopper. He had this like little flask of hot and menthol and stuff, hot water and menthol, and he'd have to put the mask over his nose and mouth and breathe to clear his chest up a bit, and then he carried on again. And it was really great. And so he said who was there, Simon Le Bon and Yasmin Le Bon. Russell Crowe came out that first night with saying that he was going out with Meg Whatnot.
Right, okay.
Who else was there? Yeah, Boy George was there. Nick Rhodes and Simon Le Bon, as mentioned. The list goes on. It says there, Richard E. Grant was there. So it was a proper kind of star fest. And the actual people who went were just picked randomly by some kind of like, you know, some gadget that you would use to just... Because apparently, this is what it says here, 10,000 peopleoids, that's the way that Blam puts it, wanted to go to the gig.
Right.
And there was just a couple of hundred who could. Right. And so and it's got a list of all the people. If you notice it on the booklet with the extra Bowie at the Beeb, it's got a list of all the people who actually went there. And there's people on there that we know, like Paul Kinder, a Bowie Wonderworld, done an amazing job for all these years. Yeah. And Stephen King, who was an old mate who was just completely Bowie mad. So there's some people on there that I do recognise. But a great thing to have.
Oh, you're privileged. You really were.
Yeah, again, I know.
The A to Z of David Bowie with Mark Riley and Rob Hughes.
All right, well, S is also for Sex Pistols. Now, at this point in time, Bob, we just need to say that this is S part 10.
It really is, yes.
We didn't see this coming, did we?
We thought perhaps S might be a four-part, five-parter possibly, but here we are, you know, at part 10, and we think this might just be the last entry in S. There are more, but we thought we've got to draw a line somewhere.
We have got to stop, Bob. We've just got to stop. And so, you know, this will be a bit of a longer episode than usual. Hopefully nobody will complain. And the Sex Pistols thing is actually quite nebulous, really.
Yeah.
You know, but there are some very interesting things within this story and some quite poignant things as well. So we're going to do it anyway, aren't we, Bob?
We are. I mean, the interesting thing is that each Sex Pistol, in its own way, had a to varying degrees, an appreciation of Bowie, from Sid Vicious being a really massive fan to John Lydon being a little bit on the fence and sometimes dismissive, other times kind of full of praise, and Steve Jones and Paul Cook, something else altogether, which we'll find out.
Okay, let's get to it then. So the Sex Pistols were an English punk rock band that formed in London in 1975. They were responsible for initiating the punk movement in the United Kingdom and inspiring many later punk and alternative rock musicians.
Although their initial career lasted just 2.5 years and produced only 4 singles and 1 studio album, Nevermind the Bollocks, here's the Sex Pistols. They're regarded as one of the most influential acts in the history of popular music.
The Sex Pistols originally comprised of vocalist Johnny Rotten. Well, that's not true. There was Wally, wasn't there?
There was Wally Nightingale, yeah.
But anyway, John Lydon, guitarist Steve Jones, drummer Paul Cook, and bassist Glenn Matlock. Matlock was replaced by Sid Vicious in the early 1977. Under the management of impresario Malcolm McLaren, the band provoked controversies that both captivated and appalled Britain. Their concerts repeatedly faced difficulties with organisers and authorities, and public appearances often ended in mayhem.
Through an expletive-laced TV interview in December 1976 and their May 1977 single God Save the Queen, attacking Britain's social conformity and deference to the crown, they precipitated one of the most significant pop culture-based moral panics.
In January 1978, at the end of a turbulent tour of the United States, Rotten left the band and announced its breakup. Over the next several months, the three other band members recorded songs for McLaren's film version of the Sex Pistols story, The Great Rock and Roll Swindle. Vicious died of a heroin overdose in February 1979, following his arrest for the alleged murder of his girlfriend Nancy Spungen.
In 1996, Rotten, Jones, Cook and Matlock reunited for the Filthy Lucre tour. Through 2008, they staged further reunion shows and tours. On the 24th of February 2006, the Sex Pistols, the four original members plus Vicious, were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but they refused to attend the ceremony, fittingly, calling the museum a piss stain. So
I think it was probably John Lydon who called it a piss stain.
I
can see that above the rest of the members. So the Bowie connection. So there's we know, we've talked about this one before, I think,
yeah.
But there's a really famous photograph of Sid Vicious, John Beverley, on his way to watch David Bowie at the ill-fated Earl's Court show.
Mm.
And he's got Oxford bags on, as Bowie wore, and he's got a denim jacket. He's holding it open. He's kind of got a Bowie cut, you know.
Yeah, he has, yeah. It's slightly mulletish. It's a Ziggy cut, certainly.
Yeah, and he's got a red David Bowie T-shirt with the black image of Bowie on it. And you look at it, and you can't help but like think, ah, this poor guy is going to be dead in a few years' time.
Yeah,
And the transformation between that kind of fresh-faced young Bowie fan and then, you know, the kind of mess that he became at the end of his life, it really is, it's such a sad story.
Yeah, it's so poignant, is it? According to Marco Peroni of Adam and the Ants, as well as Vicious bandmate, in the first iteration of Susie and the Banshees, he said, Sid was a tall, geeky kind of bloke into Roxy Music and Bowie. I think Sid would have wanted to be Bowie, but without the talent to pull it all off.
He didn't even have the talent to play bass, and he was a bass player in the Pistols, wasn't he?
No.
Writing in his limited edition scrapbook, John Lydon said of Vicious, he was very impressed with Davey Bowie. He loved Bowie. He loved that hairdo, but he had no idea how to get it to stick up like that, so he used red paint and put himself upside down in a gas oven.
It's bizarre, isn't it? So on the 15th of June now, 1978, John Lydon went to an Iggy Pop show at the Music Machine in Camden. Ron Asherton, later recalled in Legs McNeil's book, Please Kill Me, we were playing at the Music Machine, and after the show, Bowie and Rotten came backstage. They're all sitting around a big table, and Bowie and Iggy just kept telling Johnny flat out what he should do. You know, you should do this, get rid of these guys, straighten up your act, go talk to this person.
And he's just sitting there, not saying anything. Finally, Johnny just stood up and said, "Fuck you guys, you're full of shit." He walked towards me and Fred Smith and Gary Ramerson. Fred had a fifth of Jack, and he said, "Can I get that?" Then he goes, "You guys I want to talk to. Before that, I don't think much of the guy. After that, I go, this guy's all right. He's just told Iggy and Bowie to fuck off."
Lydon later commented in his autobiography, "Rotten, no Irish, no blacks, no dogs. I was at an Iggy Pop gig at Camden Palace in London, and I went backstage to say hello because I'd met Iggy a year before. Mr. Bowie wanted me removed, thrown out, in fact. He wasn't touring with Iggy, he was just backstage. I thought it was odd. It was Iggy's gig, and Mr. Bowie got his personal bouncers to have me removed. I've had an utter loathing for Bowie since then. What a pompous prat."
Ooh. In 2017, when The Enemy asked Steve Jones what records he'd still be listening to in 40 years' time, he offered up only one, The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. So this is from an interview with Steve Jones, and you interviewed him, didn't you?
I did.
That's what it's for, yeah. So and it was his autobiography, Lonely Boy, wasn't it?
Yeah, which is a great read, by the way. It's no holds barred. So that came out in 2016. So I had a chat with him on the phone. He lives in LA now. In November 2016, and we got onto various things, of course, talking about the history of the Pistols and all the rest of it, but his early career, well, you couldn't call it career, but his habit of thieving all the time from famous pop stars, you know, stole from the Stones and the Faces and Mott the Hoople and various others, including this one. So I brought this one up. I said to him, "You admit that you took some of David Bowie's gear after one of the Hammersmith Odeon gigs in 73, Trevor Boulder's bass amp, Bowie's microphone, Woody's cymbals and various other Neumann mics. There's an apocryphal story that says you also took Mick Ronson's Gibson guitar. Is that true?" Because it's been doing the rounds for a while, this story.
Yeah.
And he said, no, unfortunately not. And then I said to him, "When you finally met Bowie, did you tell him about that incident?"
His reply, "Yeah, he thought he was quite funny. It was actually nothing of his that I nicked, just some microphones. It wasn't like I nicked his favourite outfit or anything. It was just a bass player's amp, a bunch of Neumann mics that they were using to record and a couple of Woody's cymbals, which I've made amends for."
And he carried on to say, "Woody was actually on my radio show a couple of months ago with Tony Visconti when they were doing a little tour for that Bowie album they both played on, which was, of course, The Man Who Sold the World. I had them both live on the show and made amends to Woody by giving him a couple of $100 for his cymbals." I said to him then, "So this is all part of the 12-step philosophy then, making amends for past misdemeanors?"
He said, "Yes, the concept behind making amends for things, whether it's emotional or financial, is that there's one less thing to worry about, whether it's running into someone or having a better kip at night. To be honest, it's not really got anything to do with 12 steps, though that's where I was first shown how to do that. It's what people should do anyway, regardless if you're an alcoholic or not."
It was interesting. We got on as we talked, out of the blue, he said, "Do you happen to know, have a phone number for Luther Grosvenor, Ariel Bender from Mott the Hoople?" And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, I took his Les Paul, you know, back in the day, and I always felt really, really bad about it, and I would like to make some kind of amends. I just happened to have Luther's number in my book, or the last number I had for him." And so now this is going back only kind of maybe a couple of months ago now. I was talking to Luther, and I happened to bring this up. I said, "This is a bizarre way to start an interview." I said, "But, you know, have you heard from Steve Jones at all from the Pistols? He said, well, funnily enough, he called me maybe about 6 or 7 months ago and we had this chat. He said, I couldn't really, Luther being the kind of person he is, I couldn't really make out what he was saying a lot of the time, but I think he was trying to make amends for taking this Les Paul.
Yeah. Right.
And he said, and he is a kind of mercurial character, isn't he, Luther? And he said, well, to be honest, I'm not really bothered. You know, really not. But at the same time, wouldn't mind the money for it, or perhaps he could replace it with a similar Les Paul. Okay. But, you know, he said it's just one of those things and it happened so long ago and it was annoying at the time. But he said, you know, so much water has passed under the bridge.
Well, it has. But I mean, that's quite magnanimous, really, because, I mean, a guitar like that would be worth thousands and thousands. And so, I mean, you know, if Steve Cook wanted to kind of like give him some cash back, it would be a lot of cash back. There's no point in giving him couple of $100 because would be a slap in the face, wouldn't it?
Yeah, serious money. So the same sort of issue was referenced here in the 2017 interview with this is from Ultimate Classic Rock with Paul Cook, given his version of those events. Times were tight when the Sex Pistols started out, so much so that co-founding drummer Paul Cook said they resorted to swiping stuff from touring artists like David Bowie. You've got to understand, we weren't very rich at the time, Cook told Loudwire. We wanted to form a band, and that was one way of getting equipment.
Cook, who started a group called The Strand with Steve Jones that evolved into the Sex Pistols, said these were simply crimes of opportunity. After all, their home base was near one of the UK's most recognisable live music venues, and there was nothing, quite literally, that the Sex Pistols wouldn't pilfer. Talking about Hammersmith Odeon again.
Yeah, it was so easy to get in those places, and we'd just go round the back, Cook recalled. We lived in Hammersmith, and so many bands played in Hammersmith Odeon, so we got a full range of equipment before we could even play, really, including the PA.
Yeah, it is funny, isn't it? Because, I mean, I've mentioned this before, I think probably on the programme, but there's normally this kind of like a philosophy amongst musicians where you wouldn't nick off each other.
No,
it's like you like to think that welders won't nick each other's welding gear. It's kind of an unwritten law, isn't it, really?
But absolutely, anyway.
Fortune smiled brightly when Bowie came to town. There's a famous story about Steve when Davey Bowie was doing his final shows at the Ziggy Stardust tour. Cook noted, between shows, they'd leave all their equipment standing overnight. It was a big mistake, especially with us around.
Yeah, so an interview now from 2018 with Newsweek with John Lydon, and he's asked, was David Bowie's death upsetting to you? He said it was shocking, but I think the man died so reasonably regally, wonderfully brave to just go quietly and let the work speak for itself.
And he made extraordinary music on his way out. And then Lydon replies, well, he tried, let's put it that way. The fact that he magnificently soldiered on, I think, is power for the rest of us to absorb.
Although, when Bowie died, Lydon did post Signet Committee on the Public Image Limited website, and he told one interviewer, that's the side of Bowie I really like, the more in-depth stuff. But his presence should be missed, and it needs to be said, not by all the current idiots out there either. Listen, I love the way he died, with great dignity, and he wanted a quiet pauper's grave. What an excellent thing. No pomp and circumstance. My respect to him in death rose immeasurably.
Right, and it's funny, you know, they're talking about leaving the gear there overnight, because, again, forgive me if I've been through this, but my mate Dan lives over the road. His dad, Tom, was a copper in this area, and he got a call one night from the Hard Rock.
Oh, yes.
In Stretford, to say that there was some lights on in the venue at like 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, and could he go and have a look? So he went down with a mate there, another copper. He was on duty, and they went in, and it was a caretaker who was in there. Okay, he was not locked up yet or whatever. And they went into the venue, and all of the gear was there.
Wow, really?
Even the guitars. So they'd left it overnight, and so Tom had to go and muddy his drums. I've told Woody this. Tom had to go on Woody's drums, and his mate had to go on the guitar.
Right.
So, you know.
Wow, that's amazing.
That is like, we're looking at maybe September, was it 1972 that we're talking about?
Yeah, it was.
And to think that they're leaving, all right, you wouldn't strip a drum kit down. You certainly wouldn't strip the PA down. You would leave that amps there. The thought of a guitar being left there is really strange, isn't it? But that's what Tom said. He said that he had to go on the drums, his mate had to go on the guitar, and then they scarpered again.
Oh, great. What a leap of trust that is.
Madness. So that's it for this episode of the A to Z of David Bowie. But once again, before you go,
if you'd like to support us along the way and be a member of an exclusive Bowie club, you can. And here's how.
There's an exclusive Bowie members club called Cheap Things. And for just $5 a month, wow, you can be part of it.
Why? So now you're thinking $5 isn't much, but what exactly will I get for my hard-earned cash?
Well, in short, you'll get lots of great new exclusive material delivered to your door.
Well, computer, actually, Mark.
Via a system called Patreon.
That's right, Mark. Patreon is a payment system that allows you to contribute your monthly subscription and offers you a portal to access the exclusive material.
Material such as...
interviews with Bowie's cohorts and friends.
There'll be regular filmed Bowie quizzes.
Bowie guitar tutorials.
Unreleased archive written material.
Competitions.
And perhaps most impressively, short films featuring the Cheap Things team.
Ah, that'll be me, Mark, Howard Knock and Jason Reed.
Visiting various Bowie places of interest.
And much more besides.
All this for just $5 a month.
So if you can't resist, simply go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/cheapthings, or one word, and join up.
There's also a website,
bowiecheapthings.com.
Book early.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.